everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the doctrine of parens patriae, the parent-child relationship, right after this. In over the past century, we Americans who were once independent, capable, and able to manage our own financial, medical, and legal affairs have now been reduced to dependence, incompetence, incapacity, and we have been made wards of powerful commercial, financial, medical, and legal corporations, cartels, and bureaucratic institutions of our modern industrial society. And we've been taught to rely upon these paid professionals like bankers who manage our financial affairs and doctors who manage and treat our health problems and lawyers who direct our business and legal affairs instead of relying upon our own good common sense. That's why I contend that it's time that we Americans who were once able to catch our own fish learn once again how to fish instead of being fed by these paid professionals. Regaining our power of attorney is the single most important step in regaining our capacity, rights, liberties, and duties. Now, if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you write for my free General Law CD package? That's the place to begin. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, why don't you go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time on the doctrine of parens patriae, we were discussing the property rights attendant to children. Under the common law, we had a property right, an absolute right of life and death over the child. Today, we don't have that, and that's because the child doesn't belong to us. If anybody's going to decide what's going to be done with the child, it's the state. So anytime that a child gets into trouble, the parents are knocked right out of the equation, and a juvenile officer comes in, and he takes control. Juvenile court comes in. They spell out what the penalty is going to be. They may take your child out of your home, put him in a foster home, put him in juvenile detention, lock him up in prison or jail. It's the state that decides, here's what we're going to do with our child. And it makes all the sense in the world. I mean, after all, when I was a youngster, little kid, if I misbehaved, it wasn't Ronnie Mitchell's daddy or mommy that disciplined me. It was my parents that disciplined me. When Ronnie Mitchell acted up over at our house, he was sent home, and it was Mrs. Mitchell and Mr. Mitchell that disciplined Ronnie Mitchell. Same thing is true here. The parents of the children, the states involved in the conduct of child rearing, and that's why the state comes in and says, this is the way we want this child reared. In the same way that if you hired a babysitter, you tell that babysitter whether or not she could spank the child or how that child was to be disciplined in your absence. That's why I said that parents today, at least in America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Great Britain, are reduced to the status of babysitters under the Roman civil law in place of our common law. Now, we used to practice the common law in the United States, but we decided that wasn't good for us, and we went to the Roman civil law. Well, now that we've got a different law, now we have a different program that we have to follow in order to comply with it. Let's take a look, first of all, at the 12 custody standards. Not statutes, but standards that the judge all across America is looking for in determining who's going to get the custody of these children. There's 12 of them. And if you can perform on all 12 of these custody standards, the court will award you custody. They're not that difficult to do. And once you understand that the child belongs to the state and that you are a guardian, not an owner, things start to get a little simpler. They make a lot more sense. Now, we're not going to change the law. Most Americans are very happy with the law just the way it is until social lady comes in and takes their kid, and of course they're not very happy with it at all. But the 12 custody standards work like this, and this is what custody, this is what social lady and juvenile officer and a school marm are all looking for. See, these people go to college. These people have letters after their names. These people are trained in the state's methodology of child rearing. It may not fit with the Baptist theology. It may not fit with your personal beliefs. It may not fit with Catholic philosophy. But it fits with secular humanism, and secular humanism is the religion of the United States of America. That's our religion. Now, the following is a list of 12 items that a family court judge or social lady or any other paid professional will be looking for when determining a person's fitness to have physical and/or legal custody of a minor child. These are not put in any specific order, as each court, indeed each judge, will weigh each one of these standards differently. And also, some courts and or judges will have additional items which they use at their level, at their local level. However, we know of no family court that does not start with these 12 standards. Get your pencil and paper out there, boys and girls. I'm going to show you how to take custody of your child away from that other party over there that you hate so well, or hate so much. The first thing that the judge is looking for here is moral character, and usually the judge will consider the moral character of all of those who are seeking custody as well as any individuals with whom they live. All right, so as we pointed out here, that the standards for morals and moral standards is going to be different in different localities. For instance, let's say that you're in Salt Lake City, Utah. You can just about bet that that judge is going to be a Mormon. And he's going to apply the Mormon standards of morality in determining who it is that's competent or qualified for custody of the child. If he's in Atlanta, Georgia, it'll probably be a Baptist, and he's going to apply Baptist standards. If you're in Chicago, Illinois, it's a good possibility that you've got a Catholic. He's going to apply Catholic standards. So be aware of that. What region of the country do you live in? What's the predominant religious philosophy? Now, one time I did a case, and it was in front of a Jewish judge. Well, knowing that this was a Jewish judge, then I played to the moral standards of the Jewish community. I didn't wave Jesus and Christian philosophy under this judge's nose. You know, it's time to use your heads and be intelligent people. If you're in front of a Catholic judge, this is not the time to tell this Catholic judge about all of the inadequacies of the Pope. And what a good Baptist you are. So if you use your head, and what we're talking about in the way of morals, what kind of criminal record do you have? Have you been in prison for armed robbery? Have you been jailed or have you been on drugs? Are you on illegal drugs now? How about your ex-spouse? Can you prove that your ex-spouse is on illegal drugs, taking cocaine, heroin, smoking dope? Because if you can come into court with witnesses, evidence, and testimony in a motion for custody modification The judge will listen to that, and likely just that one item alone would disqualify a parent. Not necessarily terminate their parental rights, but disqualify that parent from continued parental custody. That's where custody changes are made. All right, let's take a look at morals. Are you married or are you just shacking up or living with somebody? Now, the law is pretty stringent on this. You can't raise the fact that your ex-partner over here is a lesbian or a homosexual. That won't carry the day. The judge has to put on blinders and pretend like he doesn't see sodomy or lesbians. But let me tell you, you got a Catholic judge over there and he sees lesbians and sodomites, you can let it well be known that your ex-partner over here, your ex-wife or husband, is a sodomite. But don't dwell on it. Just point out that you don't think that that's a good moral environment for the child, and then raise the other moral issues of the drugs, prison time, etc. And the judge will just quietly, behind the scenes, weigh in the sodomy, and he'll make the right decision. It's the way that game is played. Now, do you go to church every Sunday? Well, now, if you're going to church every Sunday, and you're not on drugs, and you've got a clean criminal record, and your opponent over here doesn't go to church every Sunday, is living in with somebody, is a sodomite or a lesbian, and has a criminal record, it doesn't have to be all of the above, just any of the above. That's what judges are looking for. That's what weighs in on the moral standard. All right, let's take a look at the second one. How about financial ability? Typically, women don't have as good a financial ability, but if a man were to stay home and take care of the children, he wouldn't either. So a man is in a pretty good position. That is, the father's in a pretty good position when it comes to finances. Females are at a disadvantage on this end of the spectrum. It's not fatal, but it's not helpful. The fact that you're on welfare and food stamps and that you're not gainfully employed, ladies, doesn't help you. Doesn't kill you. Doesn't sink your ship. Doesn't help you. The fact that you're out working all the time and you haven't got time to stay home and take care of the children isn't necessarily fatal, but it doesn't help you, dads. But the fact that you're pulling down $100,000 a year or $50,000 is very helpful. Who's looking after the children? Who is educating the children? Where are these children being educated? So if the father remarries and now you have a home with a woman in it, well, now that's not too shabby, Dad. Not too shabby. Mother, did you remarry and have you got a breadwinner who's out there supporting you? Are you working, and is your child a latchkey kid? See, that doesn't help you. So there are a number of factors that come in here when we talk about financial ability. This is used to determine a party's ability to provide a financially stable environment. During divorces, the wife's financial ability is based in part on just how much money she can expect to be paid by her husband. How much is she going to get in the way of child support and alimony? So that's a factor that comes in there. So you need to show that you're financially responsible. And here's another factor. If you're not paying your child support, Dad, you can kiss her goodbye. Well, you gave your child to the state, so the state doesn't want to feed, clothe, and house the kid. So they want you to do it. And if you don't pay your child support, you can just about figure that you're never going to get custody of the kid. So if you want your kid, you got to keep the child support up to date. And I mean up to date. Now, if you don't want to pay the child support, most fathers don't pay the child support. I don't know just what the numbers are, but it's high. 70-80% of fathers do not pay child support. And they don't go to jail either. You know, there's ways of getting around child support. I'm not going to get on that here. That's not the purpose of these programs. But I can tell you right now that if you're a female and you're getting divorced and you're counting on alimony and child support over there, you better get your head screwed on straight, lady, because that isn't going to happen in all probability. You're going to be out there working to support that kid, and you're going to be arguing and fighting with your old man. And yeah, you can get his visitation shut off, but you know, he figures he's not going to get visitation anyway, and why pay for something I'm not going to get? And you're fighting and arguing with him all the time anyway. That's why he divorced you. And he's tired of the arguments, he's tired of the fighting, and so he just walks off and says, kiss her goodbye. Number three. Parental affection. The lack of affection towards a child is usually seen as a sign that you're really not too interested in the child for the child's sake, but rather for what the child can get you in the way of child support, AFDC. This is a two-edged sword over here. Parental affection. The judge is looking to see, well, do you hug this child? Do you have a relationship with the child or children? Do they have a relationship with you, or do they shun you? They don't want to talk to you. They don't want anything to do with you. So you got to watch out for that. You want to make sure that while you're in court, while you're with social lady, I mean social lady and the judge, everybody that's involved with that child over there is watching the interaction between you and the child. You and the child. Interaction. Do you care about the child? They usually look for birthdays and Christmas and Easter. Are you giving them presents? Do you do things for them? Do you take them places, you know, on visitation days? Are you paying your child support? See, the child support shows parental affection. Hey, I really care about my kid, and that's why I pay that woman the child support. All right, so they're looking for moral character, financial ability, and parental affection. That's the first three. Now, how about your child-rearing skills? A very broad category that basically defines just how well you can handle the child includes items ranging from changing diapers to taking care of colds to washing clothes to reading stories. It isn't, do you take your kid to the pediatrician every week? It's, do you know what to do for this child? Do you know how to keep this child from getting sick? Do you know how to feed the child? Do you have a good handle on nutrition and sickness and disease? And if you do, you want to make sure the social lady and the judge know that, but you don't want them to see that you're out of the mainstream. If you're a vegetarian and you're a wacko, well, that doesn't help you at all. See, social lady is probably not a vegetarian. Social lady is probably into pediatrics and medical doctors and so on. The minute you say that you're into holistic health care and you're a vegetarian, you haven't got social lady's attention at all. She doesn't want to hear that. She passes that on to the judge. She passes it on to the probation officer and, you know, on down the line it goes. And you're SOL. So if you're a vegetarian, you ought to play that down. I've seen a lot of people get in there and they talk about health and nutrition and vegetarianism and so on, you know, and the judge and social aid, and everybody listens attentively. I mean, they're just staring right at you, partner. And boy, their brains are going 90 miles an hour. And they never let on as to how this is coming down. But I can tell you right now from years of experience how that one's going to come down. So you want to be in the mainstream, or at least you sure don't want to advertise the fact that you're outside the mainstream, and that's primarily the problem of most people, particularly Christians. Christians get outside the mainstream. They get off on these wacko religious ideologies. You know, like they're opposed to appendix operations and vaccinations and things like that. All of a sudden, you know, if you're opposed to vaccinations, you got to have a very good reason why. So let me tell you a little something. We'll just jump over here to medicine for a minute. I'm opposed to vaccinations, but there's an alternative to vaccination. And if the vaccination issue comes up, you should lay out your position on vaccinations in spades. For instance, did you know that 90% of pediatricians do not vaccinate their children? That's a statistic that you need to get into the record. If 90% of pediatricians don't vaccinate children, why? They must know something, Judge. Hey, social lady, you know statistically that pediatricians don't vaccinate their own children because it's dangerous. Hey, and out in California, you know, they just stopped the use of that thimerosal, I believe it is, in vaccines. And autism rates out there have nosedived. I mean, autism's just dropping off the charts. Yeah, I'm not vaccinating because I'm concerned about thimerosal, Judge. I'm concerned about autism, and I have a lot of parental affection over here. So if you're going to take on the vaccination issue, take it on, explain it. If you just get up there and say, well, I don't know, I'm just kind of opposed to vaccinations, I just don't really see no good need for it, you lose. Game's over. Pick up your marbles. Go on back home. Same thing is true now with homeschooling. There's three ways to educate a child. A little later on, we'll take a look at education. I'll show you. There's three ways to educate a child. You have a constitutional right to make that choice. But if you say, well, I don't know if education's all that important. You know, I only went to the eighth grade, and I don't know if it's really all that big a deal. You lose. It's all over for you. Social lady has a degree after her name. So does the judge and the probation officer. Everybody that is in this game is college educated. And if you're not, it's a step in the wrong direction. In fact, if you are college educated, you want to make sure that social lady knows that you got your BA, that you got your MBA, or that you got your DDS, or whatever you got, you make sure you flaunt it. The old saying goes, you know, ladies, if you've got it, flaunt it. And it's what's up front that counts. And when it comes to education, let me tell you right there, education is a very prime consideration. When you're talking about your child going to college and your spouse is talking about, well, I don't know, it makes a lot of difference. You win, she loses. Now, if both of you are sitting there and you're a couple of dunderheads and you don't care about education, now I'm not crazy about college education because of the drawbacks with college. But I'm all for education. In fact, God is all for education. God requires education. In fact, the Bible is a book that's all about education. Education, very important element. But you have the right to choose what that education is going to be, including religious education. Courts are strictly prohibited from getting involved in religious education. So you want to be very pro-education, and that can be pro-religious education, pro-secular education, whether you're an evolutionist or you're a Baptist or a Catholic or something else. You know, when the judge knows that you're going to send that child to parochial school, Catholic parochial school, boy, that's a big plus. Big plus. When the judge knows that you're going to homeschool those children, and you give them some statistics like homeschooled children on average score at the 86th percentile, public educated children score on average at the 50th percentile, unless they're in an inner city school like we are here in Chicago, Judge, where they score at the 28th percentile, and that's why I'm educating my child at home, because I want my child to have the best education that money can buy, and homeschool schooling is it. And then you might drop a couple of names, you know, like Sandra Day O'Connor, the ex-justice of the Supreme Court, was homeschooled. So what you do is you take a look at some homeschoolers, you know, like George Washington was homeschooled, Abraham Lincoln was homeschooled, you know. So you drop a few names like that and you put out homeschool over there, and it covers a multitude of sin. All right, now, how about your child training skills? Another broad category that defines how well you can prepare the child for adulthood. And there is much crossover between child rearing and child training. Child rearing and child training. Now, in the old days, we used to train our children in such things as the trades. You know, if you were a blacksmith, you'd train your children, your boys, to be blacksmiths. The Amish do it to this day. The Amish are great trainers of their children. That's why the Amish way of life has persisted for hundreds of years. They take those children, they take their children, they train them in the Amish way of life. So if you let everyone know that you're in the process of training your children, like here on the farm, our daughter was trained in milking cows, feed, animal husbandry. She's had calves and lambs in the house, saving their lives, you know, when their mothers abandon them. She knows how to stretch wire, mend barbed wire, tie barbed wire. She knows how to fix fence. She knows how to drive staples. She can use a skill saw. I mean, I got a daughter here that is very well trained. She can cook and sew. She is well traveled. And it's because of the training. Now, in child rearing, we emphasize the Ten Commandments, the law of God. We emphasized morality, right and wrong. Thou shalt not steal. And so the child, you know, as the twig is bent, so the tree will grow. And one of the popes said one time, give me a kid until he's 7 years old and he'll be a Catholic for life. Give me a kid until he's 7 years old and I got him. He'll never abandon Catholicism. Well, there are some recovering Catholics out there, but they're rare. They're rare. And child training and child rearing go together. Rearing deals with morals. Training deals with secular things like, well, can your boy ride a horse, milk a cow, fix the fence, build the fence, stretch a gate? Number 6, best interest of the child. An intuitive category used when the judge can't find a specific reason to keep or deny custody. So there's this vague and ambiguous in the best interest of the child. Well, what's the best interest of the child? Well, that he not get run over by a Mack truck. That's in the best interest of the child. That the child receive a good education. Okay, well, what's a good education? The Amish give their children a good education in the Amish way of life. Now, if you were a nuclear physicist and I said, hey, listen, why don't you educate your child to the standards of the Amish? You know, you'd look at me like, my God, man, you got to be out of your cotton-pecking mind. A nuclear physicist envisions, he sees his son or daughter as being a physicist, as being a scientist, as being someone who's cosmopolitan, lives in the city. That's the best interest of my child. So you want to use the term the best interest of the child and in judicial economy. Those are called buzzwords. The judge likes to hear those. He likes to hear, judge, in the interest of judicial economy, I would move that. Yeah, let's speed things up. You know, let's get home so that we can watch the 6 o'clock news. In the best interest of the child, that's a buzzword. It's vague and ambiguous, but don't be afraid to use it. In the best interest of the child, I would propose thus and so. In the best interest of the children, I would propose so and so. Always be thinking about, well, what's in the best interest of the children? All right, now watch this. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, that the children are in the custody of your ex-wife. Could be the other way around, ladies. I'm not picking sides here. And your ex-wife does not like your mother. And so she's telling the children that Grandma Jones is a real dork, that Grandma Jones is a real misfit, and Grandma Jones is a real wicked and evil person. That's one of the best ways to terminate custody. So if you're doing that, you want to stop. You don't want to run down any other family members. Unless, of course, Uncle Joe is an armed robber and a drug addict, you could say, well, you can't go over to Uncle Joe's because he's an armed robber and a drug addict, and Aunt Mary over there, she's a drunken alcoholic, and that's a bad environment for you, Junior, and you can't go over there. But if Grandma is anywhere near normal, and you're trying to do your best, custodial parent, to poison your children's affections toward aunts, uncles, grandmas, grandfathers, and so on, those are grounds for terminating. And if you catch your, if you can catch your spouse doing that, you want to raise that to the court. You want to bring it up. It's a motion. Bring it up in a motion. Not to terminate parental right, it's a motion to change custody. Change custody. Number 7, the ability to provide the necessities of life. That kind of goes along with the financial ability. What's your ability to provide the necessities of life? I got to take a break right here and remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the U.S. and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is also updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archive. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, economics, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package to order yours. Please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this local station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School Direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the doctrine of parens patriae. Parens patriae, spelled P-A-R-E-N-S, P-A-T-R-I-A-E. Now, what that means is that we're talking about the parent-child relationship. And we've been covering the property rights angle and how birth certificates come into play and marriage licenses and birth certificate alienate your property rights and so on. And now we're looking at the 12 custody standards. What do judges and social workers and others that are the paid professionals in this business, in the child custody business, what is it that they're looking for? And these are the 12 standards that they're taught in college, or that they're looking for other reasons, to make a determination as to which parent should get custody, or should we indulge in joint custody or termination of parental rights. Now, once your parental rights have been terminated, which is an extremely difficult process, if you've got a case where somebody's trying to terminate your parental rights and you don't want them terminated, and you go in and say, no, I don't want my parental rights terminated. I had a young woman one time who, I mean, this woman was really bad news. I mean, she was a whore, and she was a slut, and she was a drug addict, and she was a loser, and she had this little girl. And so the social worker came out and said, okay, well, now we want you to go to parenting class. And this woman said, I ain't going to parenting class. Okay. Well, the ultimate end was her parental rights were terminated. Child was sent off to live with somebody else. Now, here's the moral of the story. All you have to do is say, yes, ma'am. Remember I showed you that, I think, a couple programs ago. Yes, massa. Can you say that? Yes, massa. You know, if you get that down right, John Pat, I mean, you can't lose your kid. You can be a drug addict. You can be an ex-con. You can be a felon. You can have the worst morals in the world. You can be a sodomite. Nobody's going to terminate your parental rights if you just shut up and do what you're told. So, to show you how this one works, you go to parental class. You know, they've got these classes, and you go to some psychologist, and they tell you this, and they give you a test, and if you put your mind to it, and you go to these classes, you know, if you're an alcoholic, and the judge says, now, I want you to go to AA. Yes, massa. How's it going to AA? And you go to AA. They will not terminate your parental rights, even though you're a drunken sot. It won't terminate your rights as long as you do what you're told. I don't know how many bad parents I've seen. I look at that and I go, I can't believe that these judges and social workers over here will do that. And then they put these children back into these homes with these people that are drug addicts and ex-cons and whose morals are down in the gutter. And, of course, after they get custody of the kid, they go about their business and they continue on with drugs and alcohol and immorality and sodomy and everything else. But they were smart enough to shut up and do what the social worker told them. So I don't care how bad a parent you got, if that bad parent will shut up and do what the social worker tells them. See, the government officials, the social workers and judges, they want control over the children, they want control over the family, they want control over the custodial parent. And they're looking for weak parents that can be controlled. That's the bottom line. Now, fortunately, most people have a wild streak in them, and when you tell them that they've got to go to AA because they're drunk, they get real mean. You tell them they got to go to drug rehabilitation because they're drug addicts, they get nasty. You know, you tell them they got to go to parenting class, and they say, "No way, Jose," and then of course they get terminated. So you just make up your mind. You know, how do you want to handle it? It's a choice to be made. And pride goes before a fall. Always remember that. Pride goes before a fall. Now, when we took our break, we were talking about ability to provide the necessities of life. This goes beyond mere financial ability. To cover those items which cannot be quantified financially, a person with lots of money who cannot be bothered to buy good shoes for their child may pass the financial ability test, but pass the ability to provide the necessities of life. The Amish don't do that. Boy, the Amish have a way of life. So, you know, if you're a busy soccer mom and you're just out here working, you know, from daylight till dark, and you don't have the time to spend with your children over here, then the ability to provide the necessities of life, like, have you hugged your kid today? Do you show any love and affection for the child? Do you take the child hunting or fishing? Or, you know, our daughter here is very active socially. She goes to quilting and she goes to teen clubs and church things here and church things there. God, I can't even keep track of all the things that she's involved in. That goes to the ability to provide the necessities of life. Some of the necessities of life are social interaction with other people their age. You know, a 17-year-old girl needs to be associating with other 17-year-old girls. You know, some a little younger, some a little older. They need to have a social life. They've got to have, whether it's some teen club or they're in the quilting. Our daughter is in a quilting club where they make quilts. She's the youngest member of the quilting club. She's 17. I think that the oldest member is 93. So, you know, she's in here with old ladies. And these old ladies just love her because she's a very competent quilter. You know, she makes these, you know, these bed quilts. They're kind of an artistic thing. And being able to make those patterns and make those cuts and learn how to do that, you know, learning a sewing machine, one thing and another, that's part of the necessities of life. And so, you know, you want to terminate my parental rights to that girl? And I come in there and I would write up the list and I'd say, well, she's active in this group and active in that group and she's active over here. And we've trained her and she's an Annie Oakley. I mean, that girl is good with a gun. She's good with a needle. She's good with a spoon. She can cook. She can bake. She can fix fence. She can ride a horse. She can camp. She can. I mean, that's what the necessities of life are all about. So if you're looking for custody, what you need to do is to show social lady over here your ability in providing these necessities of life. You know, young women ought to learn how to can. And young boys ought to learn how to shoot and how to learn how to ride a horse. I mean, you don't have to have a farm to learn how to ride a horse. A lot of people are out there equestrians, you know, and they're city people. City people ride horses. All right, number 8, formal education. In a contested issue of custody, the general rule is that all other items being equal, the more educated a party is, the better their chances of keeping or getting custody. Boy, that's a shocker. So, if you're a high school dropout, Barney, and your wife is a college graduate, and she wants custody and you want custody, boy, that one's 3 strikes against you going into the game. Now, the truth of the matter is it ought not to, and in cases where you're talking about the Amish, and I don't know if the Amish ever get divorced, I imagine they must have one once in a while. The Amish only go to the 8th grade. They're not heavy on formal education. The Amish are heavy on education. They're very heavy on learning how to use a team of horses and learning how to cook and can and sew and child rearing and building houses. I mean, those Amish out there are phenomenal. They can build a barn. You put a bunch of them Amish together, they'll build a barn in a day. I'm a general contractor. For the life of me, I cannot comprehend how in the hell you can get 50 or 100 guys out there working on the barn. I couldn't get 50 guys out there to work together, much less build a barn in a day. The Amish do it. Now, those Amish are heavy on education, on the trades and on crafts and on using your hands and how to do things that are practical. But they're not heavy on formal education. So if you had this Amish guy over here and he was married to a woman over here, let's say, you know, that's college material, that Amish guy's got 3 strikes against him because, see, social lady and the judge are both formal educators, aren't they? See what you're up against? Now, it's not necessarily fatal. And if you use that to your advantage and you come around and you say it's true that we don't practice formal education, but that does not mean that we don't believe in education and that we don't practice teaching our children the things that they need to know. As farmers, we don't need to know the square root of the inverse proportion of the distance to the sun. But as farmers, we do need to know how to shoe a horse, or how to milk a cow, or how to put bales of hay in the barn, or how to bale hay, or, you know, there's just all these things that a farmer needs to know. So you can overcome that, and if you find that you're short on one or more of these custody standards, well, then what you need to do is to make sure that in the other areas you are outstanding. So if you're outstanding in a couple of three areas and a little weak in a couple of three areas, the outstanding will overcome the weakness. But don't make a mistake and say, I don't have to do this one and I'm not going to. You have to do all 12. You've got to do all 12 to some degree. Now, it could well be that your ex-wife here, she can only perform 10 and you can only perform 10. Well, okay. Judge looks at it and says, well, these two dolts, neither one of them are competent, but I got to choose between one or the other. Now, here's a kicker. Don't you believe for a moment that the judge has to pick between Martha and John. The judge can pick a foster home. The judge can send that kid anywhere he wants. The judge is the chief guardian. I showed you that when I went through guardian ward relationships. You are the least guardian. The judge is first, social lady second, and you're third. And that's where the pecking order is. And so what you're trying to do is to impress social lady. If social lady is opposed to you, it's not necessarily the kiss of death. But let me tell you, if social lady is opposed to you, you've got two strikes against you coming into the game. And that's going to be hard to overcome. So one of the first things that we try to do is to get on a good footing with social lady. I don't agree with the process. I don't agree with the politics. I don't agree with the laws that's being applied. But hey, boys and girls, this is where it's at. This is the way the law is being applied. Now, take a lesson from this judge, Roberts. John Roberts. The very first thing he did was he went up on Capitol Hill and he went in and talked to Ted Kennedy. And Ted Kennedy is one of the guys that voted against him when he was up for nomination to the, I believe it's the D.C. Circuit. Is that where he's from, the D.C. Circuit? So he's up here mending fences. The first thing you do is you go into social lady and you sit down across the desk and say, my name is Harry Wolf, and I'm seeking custody of my daughter from my wife. And I think that I'm competent and qualified, and if there's anything that I'm not competent and qualified in, I would like to feel free. I'd like to be able to come in and talk to you about that. All of a sudden, social lady says, oh, you want to come in and talk to me. You want my advice as to how you should raise the state's child. Yes, ma'am, I would like your advice on how I should overcome this problem or that problem or something else. First thing I do, I go right to social lady. Now, here in our county, we got social ladies. We got two or three of them. Now, we're on a first-name basis with all of our social ladies here in this county. And that's because I don't make these laws. I don't make these rules. I'm just telling you, boys and girls, that's the way the game is played. And if you want to play in this game, you want to play in this league, that's the way it's got to be played. Now, you don't have to. You can stay away from social lady. Social lady doesn't know you and you don't know her. Now your spouse goes in and sits down across from social lady and says, social lady, I may need your advice from time to time, and I'd like to feel free to be able to come in here and talk to you about how we're raising little Junior over here. And all of a sudden you got social lady on the side of your wife and she's neutral toward you. Social lady is going to be biased, and she's going to make her recommendation. Social lady and juvenile officer are both going to write reports and submit them to the judge with their recommendation. And again, the judge, when he listens to your testimony, he may overrule social lady and probation man, but not very often. The judge almost always goes along with social lady and probation man. School marms never, or very rarely, I shouldn't say school marms never come into the equation. Sometimes the school teachers will come in and testify in a custody case. Not often, but once in a while. But social lady's always going to be there, and probation man's always going to be there. And they're going to be talking about your children's criminal behavior, or lack of it. You know, if they don't have any criminal behavior, that's a step in the right direction. Here's another thing. If you've got a kid that's out of control, let's say you got a boy, Roger, you got a boy. And your ex-wife has been raising him, and the kid's getting into trouble. I mean, he's shoplifting and stealing, and he's getting into trouble. You run over to Social Lady, you bring up a motion hearing to change custody, and you tell him, hey, listen, this kid's heading in the wrong direction. He's getting into trouble. He's going to end up in prison because Mary can't control him. But I'm his dad, and I can control him. So give him to me. He's 11 years old. He's 12 years old, getting off on the wrong foot. You can get that boy. Now, Dad, you're not going to get your daughters because there's so much incest, so much child abuse, sexual child abuse going on with men toward their daughters. That unless you're married and you've got a woman in the home, it's not very likely that you're going to get custody of your daughters. You know, if they're 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. Now keep this in mind. Children, when they get to be 12, 13, 14, can also add their weight to whichever party, whichever spouse they want to live with. So, you know, if you've got a boy that you're up on the child support, the kid's 12 years old, he wants to come live with you, make sure that you let the judge know that. And it should be made very plain to the judge. The boy should testify. The boy should write a letter to the judge. You know, I love my mother. I think she's a great lady. But, you know, I'm 12 years old, and she can't take me hunting, fishing, and she can't teach me the skills that a boy needs to know, and I need my father to teach me that. You write a letter like that, boys, to the judge, and I'll almost guarantee it that judge is going to change custody on those boys. And if you've got a father over here that's in custody of the girls, and the girls say, I need my mother, I need to learn how to cook and can and sew and do those things that women need to know in life, that judge is going to send that girl over with the mama. That's the way that game's played. Now, religious education is another nebulous area, though judges will usually show preference toward those who provide religious education over those who do not. So if you're going to provide a religious education and your spouse is not, or they're ambivalent, or they're neutral, that's a plus for you. And it doesn't make any difference what religion it is. Everybody's in agreement that if you're sending a kid to church or school some kind of a religious education, it's more likely that that kid isn't going to end up in prison or in jail. So no matter what you think of religion, churches and Protestants, Catholics, Jews, and so on, any religious instruction is better than nothing. Now, 10, playmates. A party's ability to provide the child with an adequate number of suitable playmates for purposes of socialization and mental health and well-being of the child. A parent in a rural area, however, does not have to be at a disadvantage to a parent in an urban one. If they can show the playmates their child has make up for the quality, what they may lack in quality or quantity or quality and quantity. Listen, out here on the farm, there's other kids that are out on the farm, and those kids get together. That's not a problem. Just make sure that you're not isolating your children. A lot of you religious people out there want to isolate your children in your religious isolation. That's a mistake. And if Social Lady and the judge get hold of that, they're going to take that kid away from you. So we're not Methodists, Baptists, or Pentecostals, but our daughter goes to the Methodist and Pentecostal church. And she sings and plays the piano there. And she goes to their youth groups. And the rationale behind it is very simple. Our daughter lives in a little community. There's 542 people that live in this zip code called Isabella, Missouri. And she's going to inherit this farm. She is going to live with all of these other 542 people for the rest of her life. And those people are Pentecostals. Those people are Methodists. Those people are Baptists. We're not. But she has to get along with them. And socialization with those other religious groups, their political ideologies, is a part and parcel with what Social Lady's looking for. Can she get along with the other people in the community? You lock them up and isolate them, they don't like that. That's a strike against you. And then the history of child abuse, like moral character, This is both for the person seeking custody as well as anyone living with them. Judges will also consider if the child has been abused, and if so, by whom. Individuals who have been shown to have abused children will have a much lower chance of obtaining custody, whether it's sexual or physical. And then, finally, number 12, the history of child neglect. Like moral character, this is both for the person seeking it and custody, as well as anybody living with them. Judges will also consider if the child has been neglected, and if so, by whom. Individuals who have been shown to have neglected children will have a much lower chance of obtaining custody. Hey, listen, Daddy. Failure to pay child support is child neglect. That's what I'm telling you. If you want the kid, you pay the child support. You don't pay the child support, you ain't getting the kid. I don't know of a single father who doesn't pay or didn't pay his child support that ever got custody of a kid. Now, I suppose it's happened a time or two, you know. But it's not the norm. It's not usual. It's not very customary. And I can almost tell you right now, it ain't going to happen. Now, those are the 12 rules that you've got to follow, because we live in a secular, humanist, welfare state. We don't own our children, and we are mere guardians, and we're the third guardian in the list, or on the list, of control and parenting over the child. Now, next time we'll take a look at the scripture, and I'll show you how these how the scripture impacts upon this child or parent-child relationship. And I'm going to take two or three topics. We'll take education, and I'm going to show you that the law provides for you to educate your child, and you can make that selection. All children have to be educated, but you get to select it. So if you run into a social lady over here who's adamant that your child has to go to public school, you can point out to the social lady that the choice is yours. Show her the law. Sometimes public officials are just ignorant of the law themselves. So if you firmly but politely show social lady, no, here's the law, and this is what I'm going to bring up to the judge. She doesn't want to be made a fool of in front of the judge. She'll back off of that public school thing, but you got to be pro something. You can't just be, I'm anti-public school. If you're anti-public school, then you got to be pro something else, the alternative. You don't want to be neutral or negative. You want to be pro. You don't just walk in there and say, well, I'm against vaccinations, and I'm against public school, and I'm against meat. Well, that's the kiss of death. If you're a vegetarian and you're opposed to meat, then you need to be pro-health. You know, if you're opposed to public school, then you got to be pro-parochial school. Or pro-homeschool. That's the way the game is. And then you're trying to play to an audience. And the audience is social lady, probation man, and the family court judge. Play that game by these 12 rules, and it'll improve your chances of getting custody or taking custody away from the other side by about 10 to 1. I mean 10 to 1 if you can do all 12. All right, we're about out of time. We're going to have to close, and we'll be back with the last segment of this program tomorrow night. So remember, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct, 417-273-4967, to order yours. That's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals. Now, out of time. See you tomorrow night. Same time, same station. Thanks for listening. Goodbye, friends.